From WCMU Public Media, this is Between the Lakes, a weekly recap of the top news stories impacting Central and Northern Michigan. I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Coming up on the show, multiple WCMU articles were temporarily scrubbed from Google search results after several bogus copyright claims were filed against the newsroom. Both stories reported on a Florida congressional candidate's ties to a small data center operation in the UP. Still unclear who submitted the claims.
I couldn't find these entities. I couldn't find any content that seemed related that allegedly WCMU would have copied from. I mean, I just couldn't find anything to support the facts here.
More on why the plagiarism claims were false and how the articles were restored on Google. And pies are celebrated this weekend as a national day of recognition. So for this week's Brain Teaser, we will focus on a famous pastry from Northern Michigan that has a rich history. Crust me, it's a good one. And it's right after this. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has approved a permit for a proposed tunnel project under the Straits of Mackinac. It's one of the last required permits for Enbridge's Line 5 project, although several lawsuits are pending. The Corps says the tunnel is not contrary to the public interest and does not, quote, impermissibly impair treaty rights. Nicole Kiway-Biber with the Little Traverse Band of Ottawa Indians disagrees.
Let's introduce a whole new, quantity of infrastructure that's completely unproven and never been attempted in what's at the heart of these sacred lands.
Enbridge Energy says the Corps' review was comprehensive. The company says it's committed to protecting the Great Lakes. This summer's wildfire smoke from Canada that blanketed Michigan and nine other states caused more than $38 billion in economic losses. That's according to a study by economist Richard Melstrom for the Anderson Economic Group. Melstrom says wildfire smoke can make people ill or stay home from work to reduce their exposure, and it can also cause business closures and event cancellations.
It has a labor market impact that affects productivity, and it affects how much people earn and how much they're able to spend.
Melstrom says federal environmental data indicated Michigan was the most affected by the smoke. He says the state also has the largest economic loss at more than $6.5 billion. 272 pharmacies closed their doors in 2024 across Michigan. That's according to the latest data from the Michigan Pharmacists Association. And as WCMU's Blaise Carpenter explains, mail-in prescriptions are helping fill the gap as brick-and-mortar stores decline.
Express Scripts, CVS Caremark, and Optum Rx fill about 80% of all prescriptions across the country. But many independent pharmacies are blaming these companies for closures due to poor reimbursement rates in directly mailing drugs to consumers. Ashley McGinn is with Michigan's Insurance Assistance Program. She says that people are choosing mail-in services due to its convenience and low cost.
The insurance plans are going towards mail order as their preferred pharmacy, which that in turn gives you a cheaper prescription.
Pharmacists say mail-in orders can't perform the same clinical care a retail store can and fear more closures are on the horizon. The three major pharmacy benefit managers deny that they are contributing to the decline of pharmacies. I'm Blaise Carpenter, WCMU News.
A World War II veteran who went missing in action will soon be returning home to Bay City. Corporal James Torka was killed while serving as a mechanic in Papua New Guinea. His remains were identified through advances in DNA technology as part of an ongoing Department of Defense effort to bring home missing soldiers. Andrew Turner is with the Bay County Veterans Affairs Department. He says the Army initially classified Torka's remains as non-recoverable because of the battlefield's rough terrain.
It's kind of an extraordinary feat of both science and diplomacy, really, in engaging the local community there in helping find these and return him to his family.
An official with the Department of Defense says Torka hasn't come back to Michigan yet, but when he does, he'll be buried next to his parents. Torka died at the age of 36. He received a Purple Heart for his service. And residents, reunited families, and curious tourists are piling into a small town in northern Michigan this weekend. WCMU's Grace Walker has more on how business owners are preparing for Rogers City's biggest event of the year.
Rogers City volunteers and business owners have been prepping for the Nautical City Festival for weeks. Volunteers say the town of less than 3,000 is expected to bring in upwards of 15,000 this weekend for the festival. Some business owners say revenue from this festival helps sustain them year-round. Cassie Cook is the owner of the local coffee shop Cook's Coffee Nook. She says the cafe saw its busiest day on record during the festival last year.
We almost tripled our busiest day that we had had to date. So that was kind of crazy.
Cook says business owners are ordering double of everything and scheduling extra staff throughout the weekend to keep up with the busy days. Reporting from Roger City, I'm Grace Walker, WCMU News.
And now it's time for this week's Brain Teaser. I'll pull from a hat either a random fun fact, a riddle, or a quiz question, all meant to tease your brain this weekend. So let's draw. Today's question revolves around Michigan's famous meat pie, and it's multiple choice. It reads, which group of immigrants introduced the pasty to Michigan's Upper Peninsula in the 19th century? Was it A, Finnish, B, Cornish, C, Italian, or D, German? Again, which group of immigrants introduced the pasty to Michigan's Upper Peninsula in the 19th century? A, Finnish, B, Cornish, C, Italian, or D, German? And we'll reveal the answer after this. A WCMU article written about a businessman who is connected to a controversial Bitcoin mine in the eastern UP was temporarily removed from Google's search results. That businessman, whose name is on the mine's permit, is running for Congress in Florida. The story was temporarily taken down by an infringement claim from an unknown company. And here to explain why his story was briefly taken down is WCMU reporter A.J. Jones. AJ, why was your story pulled down from Google search results?
Well, the story is about Michael Carbonara, a businessman running for Congress in Florida. He is on the permit for a Bitcoin mine in Dafter Township, which is located next to a school. There is a lawsuit against the companies that own the Bitcoin mine and the land it's on. The school, Lake Superior Academy, claims the Bitcoin mine is too loud and the kids can't learn. A Carbonara hasn't said anything direct about the Bitcoin mine that we know of, but he alluded to having built a Bitcoin mine at a Florida campaign event. I wrote about it. And that story was temporarily taken down from Google's search results after a company called Davenport Enterprises, the day after I wrote it, July 31st, filed a claim with Google, and in that claim, they said I wholesale plagiarized the article. They called it, quote, a complete unauthorized reproduction of our copyrighted material, which is totally untrue. The story was taken down.
So, AJ, what did they specifically accuse you of, and what did WCMU do?
So, Davenport Enterprises accused us of plagiarizing a story from the Tallahassee Democrat. We didn't. And Davenport isn't associated with the Tallahassee Democrat. Davenport also said they reached out to WCMU, and according to WCMU's leadership, that is not the case. Lawyer Karen Post is representing WCMU. She says she looked into Davenport, who sent the claim, and this is what she said about them.
I couldn't find these entities. I couldn't find any content that seemed related that allegedly WCMU would have copied from. I mean, I just couldn't find anything to support the facts here. And so the whole thing just seemed very suspicious.
So Karen Post filed a counterappeal, and Google brought the article back onto its search results.
For those who might not be following the politics, why would this story be such a big deal?
Right, so Carbonara, who was the topic of the story, is running for a U.S. House seat in the Palm Beach area. Early voting is underway, and Election Day is on the 18th. Data centers have become a big deal in the race in his seat, which is Florida's 22nd Congressional District. Project Tango is a proposed data center that was blocked by local politicians. Carbonara opposed the project and called for local control of data centers. But his ties to the Bitcoin mine are becoming a campaign issue. Early voting began last week. Several other Florida outlets have also been hit with bogus copyright claims. So in addition to our story about Michael Carbonara and the Bitcoin mine getting scrubbed from search results, two other outlets, Florida Politics and WLRN, who are the South Florida NPR affiliate, also had bogus claims made by them by unknown companies. One company, Pendrick Enterprises, used an article that WLRN wrote in an attempt to take down the article on Florida Politics. So Pendrick Enterprises wrote a claim saying that this Florida Politics article was stolen from this WLRN article, and they had nothing to do with WLRN. WLRN wrote their own story saying that they had nothing to do with this claim. I should be clear, Michael Carbonara's campaign did not respond to our request for comment, and there's no official link between his campaign and these companies that are filing these bogus copyright claims. Carbonara is polling in a close third place, according to a recent poll of the 22nd District.
Okay, but it does sound like someone wants stories about Carbonara taken down. So how widespread is this, and do we know why it's happening?
There are at least two other outlets, The Sun Sentinel and The Floridian, who have been hit with claims that resulted in their articles being temporarily pulled from Google's search results. Lisa McGraw is the public policy manager for the Michigan Press Association. She says the point of the effort may not have been to successfully remove the articles about Carbonara permanently, but to stifle their reach.
And if they're pulling your story down, they've accomplished something. And it's unfortunate that they have figured out how to do it so quickly and easily.
I should be clear, there is no known link between these unknown companies and Michael Carbonara.
And AJ, how are these unknown companies even able to file these claims?
Well, according to federal law spelled out in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, online service providers like Google have to take down content that an IP holder claims violates copyright law. Now, the webmaster, so us in this case, can file a counterclaim, and Google has up to 2 weeks to put the alleged offending content back online unless the people who are claiming it's stolen want to file suit. This claim is obviously bogus, so according to Karen Post, our story was put back online on August the 3rd, which is the first Monday after it was taken down. In a statement to WCMU, Google said they work to assist rights holders while also protecting free expression. They said their review process helps combat fraudulent takedowns, including ours.
Wow. Great reporting on this, AJ. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now it's time to reveal the answer to this week's Brain Teaser. This week's multiple choice question reads, which group of immigrants introduced the pasty to Michigan's Upper Peninsula in the 19th century? Was it A, Finnish, B, Cornish, C, Italian, or D, German? And the answer is B, Cornish. Miners from Cornwall, England, brought the pasty to the UP in the 1840s. Its shape made it the ultimate portable lunch. The thick, crimped crust served as a handle because miners held it with dirty hands and they threw the crust away. Finnish immigrants later adopted the pasty and added other things to it, like rutabaga instead of potatoes, and made it a UP favorite. That's all for this edition of Between the Lakes. Don't forget to subscribe to the Between the Lakes newsletter linked in the show notes, where you'll find more of our reporting and analysis from across the region. Visit our website, WCMU.org, to find out how to listen to your local WCMU radio station. This podcast is produced in part by the members of NABIT Local 412. It was edited and mixed by Rick Brewer. Our theme music comes from Gabe Shaw. Mike Horace is our executive producer. And I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.